Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, welcome back to Season 4 of Pigeon Hockey, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is Chris and today's co-host, Heath.
What's up, hockey fans?
And you know us, we don't claim to be hockey experts, but rather just a couple of attendees that love to play, watch, read, and talk about hockey. On this episode, we want to welcome back special guest from the UMass Boston Beacons, Antonio Tarantino, as well as new special guest from the Rogue Valley Royals of the USPHL, Caden Enstrom. Caden and Tino, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So, Caden, this is your first time on the podcast. Welcome to the podcast. So, we're going to do what we have to do before we get into the actual focus of this podcast. So, you listeners know, we're going to be talking about the goalie mindset. But we want to talk to Caden about, you know, his hockey life and what's taken him to where he's at right now at the Rogue Valley Royals. And, Caden, let us know about yourself and your hockey life.
Depends where we start, but I guess if we're going from the beginning, I guess I started around three and kind of played up through a small organization, just playing A and some double A tournaments until I was 14, where, you know, I got the opportunity to go play in a state championship there at the Pepsi Center, which kind of opened my eyes to, or I guess it's Ball Arena now, but the Avs rink, which kind of opened my eyes to a bigger sense of the game. And, from there I went to play AAA in Colorado Springs for my U15, U16 year, and got a lot of trials and tribulations there for sure to help develop me. And after getting cut from Colorado Springs 18s, I went to the Indy Junior Fuel U18s, where I met my now goalie coach, Nick Johnson, and developed a lot there. And from there, I kind of thought it would be an easy road to just jump into tier two or something like that. And I was rudely awakened to how big of a jump junior hockey is. And so getting cut late from El Paso, actually, I called an old coach, Bobby Ruddle, who's with the Royals. And he said, hey, I got four guys, but, you know, if you come here, like, you just got to earn it. And so I went up to Rogue Valley, played on, as you know, an absolutely terrible team, like probably averaging 62 to 65 shots a game. And definitely learned how to separate results from identity as a goaltender there. And I figured the Pacific Division was a little faster. You know, you guys got guys like Noack Person, who's ridiculous, and things like that. And so I decided to sign with the Lake Tahoe Lakers, and but it just wasn't where I needed to be. And so came back to Rogue Valley and felt definitely more comfortable on a better team, and yeah, just finished out the year as best as I could. So that kind of brings us to now.
Awesome. Yeah, we've watched you the last couple seasons. As we're all talking before the podcast started, all three of you on this podcast were playing in the USPHL last year, but Tino and Heath aged out. You still have another year of eligibility, but you know, I got familiar with all your game styles last year. And so now you have two seasons in a row between your time now split between Rogue Valley and Lake Tahoe. Got to see a lot of action. You've been mentioned on the podcast a lot. It's great to finally have you on, and excited with one more year of junior hockey. But me and Tino were talking, what was it, Tino, a few weeks yeah, back. He was talking about how you, Caden, and Tino talk a lot about the goalie mindset, and you started going to some details. He's like, hey man, why don't we just make this an episode? Why don't we just talk about the goalie mindset for an episode? And I thought that's incredible, because the three of you are all playing at this level now. Like, you're playing college hockey and junior hockey, It's been a hot minute since I was between the pipes. But, you know, the mental game doesn't change as much as the overall physical game. But I would love to hear kind of the mental game behind that. So, Caden, I might actually start with you as you're our guest. Let's talk about a little bit of like how do you focus and just your overall mindset in that. Where do you put yourself before the game, during the game?
Well, I know some goalies, like my goalie partner in Rogue Valley, were super light and loose before games, love to smile, that kind of thing. I'm, to put it in, I guess, I don't want to say I'm a dickhead, but I'm kind of in that mindset of just like all or nothing, super focused. And like, I try to get into this almost numb emotional state to where never high, never low, that kind of thing. So my intensity before games is definitely a big part for me to get into the right frame of mind. And then for focusing, it's just like, I absolutely flood my day with like visualization. And then once I get to pregame and intermission, and even during the game, it's all just breathing. So when the puck's on the other end, like it's watching the puck and breathing and just trying to focus on staying present. 'Cause there's so many things that can come into mind as a goalie, like what if this, am I going to win the game, or my stats going to be good, like all this stuff. And it doesn't serve you in that moment. And so it's just for me really about just being where my feet are. That's kind of the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, and it is important to stay focused during the game. People would think it's easier if you're on sometimes a really good team and you're not seeing a lot of shots. Now, I've been on both sides of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I've been on teams I've faced 105 shots in a game, but I've also faced 8 shots in a game. And it's amazing that you could stop a lot of those shots where you're getting 60, 70, 80 shots. And then that 8 shot game is where you let into, because your head's not in. There was a game out in Garmisch-Partenkirchen that I was playing, and our team was just so much better than this other team that game. And they had this beautiful arena, right? It was like one of the old Olympic arenas, and had these Garmisch-Partenkirchen's a very big, like skiing, like mountains, high mountains in there. And they had these big windows right on the top of the roof. And I just kind of lost myself in the windows, looking at the mountains through the windows. And all of a sudden I heard shot. And I just look, and a puck's coming right at me. And fortunately, the guy didn't have a great shot. It just kind of hit me. But I wasn't paying attention at all. I was gone. It's important to stay focused during a game. That's why, you know, as easy as people might be like, oh, this goalie only faces 14 shots a game, that can be rough sometimes. That can be really rough to keep yourself into a game. And then there's games where, like you said, when you were on that pretty rough Rogue Valley team a year ago where you guys were facing 70, 80 shots a game, that's sometimes fun. But not a lot of the time. Like you want that fair balance.
I mean, I had fun with it because, like, my mind was always, if we're going to win, I have to be absolutely lights out, which helped me to, like, get focused. But, like, yeah, it definitely takes some of your body. Like, it makes you worn out. Because I remember last year in Seattle, I faced 77. And then the night after, I faced 86. And Coach Chad Olson will tell you, like, they didn't get the stats right, but he had scratches counting. And I remember I got third star that weekend away, and I was just like on the bus ride home, just absolutely eating anything in sight, lounging out, just so exhausted. But it was definitely worth it. See, that's why I applaud these two, like Tino being on Vernal last year. You know, he faced some 50 and 40 shotters, but Vernal was just disgusting last year, especially in our division. And I don't know a ton about Fresno last year because I wasn't super in touch with Pacific, but like, you definitely have to stay focused for those, and you have to find a way to keep yourself feeling like you can stop everything.
Definitely. Definitely. I started the year at Long Beach, and I was in the same situation as you, getting 70, 80 shots a night. And then at the deadline got moved over to Fresno, and going from like 70 shots a night to 28, 30, it's even 28 and 30. That's a lot of shots, but I mean, that's a huge drop off where I was like, okay, I got to stay a lot more focused in these games. I think one game against Vegas that I played, we had 35 shots against in the first period. So, That was not the most fun. I don't think we had a shot the entire period when I was over there in Long Beach when we played them. That was not a fun game. I think I got pulled in the first period because he's like, you played the night before. We're not going to kill you here. And then we played Tahoe the next weekend. So he was like, yeah, we got to save you for Tahoe. But yeah, no, it definitely, getting all those shots, it definitely wears on your body as the season goes on, especially as a starter. It's it wears on your mental state. It wears on your body. And
I was watching that because, I mean, I think we've all now been those goalies in those really big, brutal blowouts. And I think, Aiden, I'm pretty confident it was you, and relatively confident Tina was also in that game. But it was a playoff game, Rogue Valley and Vernal last season, where it was you or ETA, but I'm leaning towards it was you and Net. Where
I played both playoff games.
It was him.
It was ETA?
Yeah.
No, I played both playoff games last year.
Okay, it was you. But yeah, I remember being in particular, and I think I said this, I definitely said it on the podcast, I didn't like often calling teams out, but I called out Rogue Valley. And I'm like, if your goalie has to stay in the net, you should have to stay on the ice because the defense and whoever was on the ice, like once Vernal got up, because the games would be relatively close-ish going into the halfway point of the game. You were keeping the team in the game. And then it just seems like the legs died and players just checked out. And yeah. I think I had said on the podcast that it was one of the first times that season, because I watched every game that season, that I was just like, I had to turn it off and come back to it later because I was so pissed at how Rogue Valley was performing in this playoff game that I'm like, yeah, that was a brutal one to that was a brutal one to watch.
That was,
it wasn't like you were just facing all the shots because Vernal was a far better team last year, but at one point it just seemed like Rogue Valley could be competitive. It proved it can be competitive, but it just chose not to be. And also I was like, what the hell happened there? I mean, at least there wasn't trash cans flying onto the ice.
That's crazy.
With Seattle and Vernal. But that was fun. It wasn't the only thing. I think Vernal also made a TikTok about all the things that were thrown onto the ice during this most recent series. So give a look at Vernal's TikTok.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah, that was an interesting playoff series because, I had that mindset of, like, if we have any chance, I have to literally make, like, a 70-save shutout. And so it actually helped me be focused, but I remember Tino and I weren't really close at that time. And I was more of a fan because I just saw this kid putting up like 940s and being like my height. And I was just like, this is sick. And then playing against him, I was just like, I kind of tried to have that fire to beat him, but it was just like, we were so outmatched. So like, you talk about that Bartakowicz kid was just – he went between the legs bar down on me the weekend before.
That was a beautiful goal. I do recall that goal. It was one of our featured goals. there was not much like Bartakowicz, that goal. I mean, the second you said that goal, I'm like, yeah, I can picture that exactly.
Yep.
That was one of the most beautiful goals of the season, and I'm like, what the hell is this? But he went pro down back in Slovakia, didn't he?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I remember sitting in the second period at the other end, probably with five shots on my stat sheet. It's still 0-0, I think, in the second. I'm like, are we gonna break this kid, or like, when are we gonna score? So, but no, that was definitely fun to watch because Eddie was putting in a hell of a performance that game. So that was definitely fun to watch too from my end.
So, Caden, so you faced all those shots and you had to go in your headspace. Heath, you also last season, as you'd mentioned earlier, played with Long Beach. And,
yeah,
well, I mean, it always – the goalies in Long Beach face a lot of shots. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, this season in particular, I think they had a couple 102 shot against games at the end of their run.
I think there was a 108. I think I did see a 108.
That's when
the end of
the season. Fresno put up 24.
Yeah, Fresno put up 24 in two games, 24 to nothing, 24 to one, and then they won 12 to nothing or something like that. And I think all of them, they were over 100 shots against. So
that was not on the goalies.
No, God,
that wasn't
no.
on on who else would be in net there for him. I don't know. It was Krell, Sedigayan, Patterson in the beginning of the season, but he left.
Long Beach in the beginning of the year wasn't bad. We had a couple of kids on Long Beach on Rogue Valley mm-hmm. after they traded everybody away, and Patterson was putting up good games, and then they had mm-hmm. Cherniak at that time. Like, they weren't bad, and then they just
Heath, you were in that for those, again, those beginning of last season with Long Beach. Yeah. What was your headspace getting into a game like that, knowing you were generally going to be facing the same style shots and the same amount of shots that Edstrom was facing?
Yeah, honestly, have fun with it. You know you're going to get, you know, upwards of 50 shots a night. So, you know, you gotta be light. You gotta have fun with it. Obviously, I take things very seriously. So losing games pissed me off. Losing that many games pissed me off. As it should with anybody, really. It's something that can drive you. But going into games, my preparation was pretty simple. I would arrive pretty early to the rink and stuff like that. I would do a yoga at my house, and then I'd do some stretching when I got to the rink. And then I'd do a meditation for about 10, 15 minutes where I just listen to ocean sounds, breathe, and close my eyes. Just imagine the game, kind of what's going to happen. A lot of the times it was what was going to actually happen. You know, big 2-on-1 saves, things like that, breakdowns, things like that. Just kind of gaining that internal confidence before you take the ice. And then, you know, it was as soon as you get out there and you lose the opening draw and they come flying down to your end and you know you're going to be hemmed in for a couple minutes, you kind of get locked in there pretty quickly. I think that happened when we played Vernal there in Vegas. So it happened pretty quickly where they just won the opening draw and we knew it was going to go sideways pretty quickly there. There was a couple of times in the season where I was like, okay, all right, if I can hold it through the first period, we'll be fine. But yeah. But yeah, no, it's definitely a mental warfare, getting that many shots against on a consistent basis and knowing you're going to get that many shots against on a consistent basis. So your mental state has to be super strong.
What's the interesting thing about knowing ahead of time you're going to get a lot of shots is mm-hmm. most of the time you perform better than an average game, which is really, really strange. And I'm not sure why that is the way it is. But just when you know you're going into a game where you're going to see 50 plus shots, a lot of times you're already locked in and you're having very, very good games. So it's very interesting how that works. But
yeah, and it tends to go that way. Even like you watch NHL games, like the goalies that are at the top of the league, right? Like they typically get about 5 to 10 shots in the first period, and that's high for an NHL game, right? So you know, they'll get 5 in the first 5 minutes and it gets you into the game. But like with us in juniors, we were all taking 5 to 10 in the first, you know, 5 minutes of the game. So getting locked in, knowing what's kind of coming and stuff like that was huge for us, I think. You know, especially knowing you're going to get 50 plus for us over here. So.
Yeah. And I think that it is a mental game going for, you have to play different games differently. You know, when you're going into an opponent's house or they're coming to yours and you know who you're facing off against, you shift your mindset on what to expect and you like just imagining how things will happen. Like that's one of my favorite things of just every single time I stepped onto the ice because as you can't tell, I started a podcast. I'm a little bit of a chatterbox. And so, but when I step onto the ice, I went mute. My brain was always just thinking about every potential type of shot I could face, how good the team was, what I was expecting to see right out the gate, hoping I could just get a simple one or two on my chest. And, you know, the second the puck was dropped, get those confidence builder saves so I could get myself into the game. That was a big thing for me. But weirdly enough, I haven't heard anyone else mention I had a very different way of playing. I didn't play very well in a good headspace. I had to be angry. So I tried to specifically find music that made me angry or situations that made me angry. Just one player where I'm like, I really hate this player on that other team. So he's just pissing me off. So I try to get under the skin of at least one opponent so they could try to get under my skin. I was penalized quite often, but it would help me get into the game. just to be in that, like, I don't know, when I got angry, the ball just became, or the the puck became a ball. It became a beach ball. If I was happy and in a good mood, it wasn't a good game for me. I don't know why I was built like that as a goalie, but to each goalie their own. Mm-hmm. Or there's like a lot that, like, Devin Levi meditates. Like, that's incredible to me. Like, I mean, that's probably why he's a lot better goalie than I ever was. The angry guy didn't make any levels. The meditation guy is doing really well.
You know? To be fair, Jordan Binnington does that. I mean, Tino knows when we were at GGR this year, like, Dave Alexander talked about Jordan Binnington and how that guy's just hot. And he's a really good guy off the ice is what he was saying. But, like, the intensity brings him into the game, and him kind of being that enemy type figure is what helps him intensify his focus and play better ultimately. And, you know, they talked about, like, when it's too much, when it's bringing you away from the game. But, like, I think it's just whatever works for you, like, finding what works for you and running with it, I guess.
Yeah. And that's what maybe I should have focused on getting angry a lot sooner than that, because I was generally a pretty laid back. I don't know. I was also Mr. Glass. So I'm a big DiPietro fan too, because I relate with people constantly saying what a bust. And I'm like, he wasn't a bust. He got injured. He was an incredible goalie. I mean, you know, he was incredible. But when it's hard, when, like, I kind of started thinking that was going to happen to UPL with Buffalo. Because, I mean, what is he, 23, and he's already had both hips replaced? I mean, that says something about the level of compete within that player. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm hoping UPL can continue his trajectory that he's had this season, because I thought we'd trade him at the beginning of the season, but I'm glad we didn't.
I remember seeing last year, like, Levi come into the league and just rip it up, and I was like, oh, like, everybody's saying he's going to have a sick year, and then you kind of watch this goalie battle happen between Levi and UPL, and he was just, like, he definitely showed his veteranship. And obviously Levi's a rookie, but, like, he's just been lights out, especially on a team like Buffalo this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's what's going to help Buffalo finish ninth again this year. But we can't have anything nice. But yeah, I mean, it's – to each goalie their own, and that's why, you know, I never believed that DiPietro was a bust. He just injuries will end any career quite early. But the headspace of going into, like, now Tino, you were on a really solid Vernal Oilers team last year. Clearly you guys made it to Nationals, and congratulations to the Vernal Oilers this season and the Ontario Junior Reign both going to Nationals this season. So I'll be rooting for both teams, and I'm really unhappy that they face off for the second seed game against each other, but again, that's just a season. Mm-hmm. So I'm not terribly upset about that, because it just depends on who you play. So we can get into USPHL playoffs next podcast, but going to be rooting for both those teams as they move forward. And you were at that stack team last year, Tino. So you went into different games with a little bit different mentality. Talk about, because we've talked about some of the really good things to look at when you're going into net. What are some dangerous tendencies? Like, if you're on a strong team, I would say highlight to people what the dangerous tendency on being in a good, really good team does heading into a game.
First thing that comes to mind is just being too complacent with yourself or maybe who you're playing against. And, you know, there's been a bunch of times throughout me playing where our team would underestimate the opponent, and the game just wouldn't go to plan right away, like right when the game starts. And even going with yourself, just being too complacent with yourself, maybe underestimating the team once again, that could really take your focus away from the game, as well as what you need to do as a goalie to help your team and give your team a chance to win. So I think that was one of the things last year where I kind of didn't try to think of who we were playing against or negative outcomes, just kind of stay in a present mind, like Eddie was saying earlier, and just doing what you know what you can do. You know, it's all about confidence at the end of the day. So if, you know, when you're playing confidently, I think you're capable of a lot of good things. it's when your mind starts wandering, having different thoughts and, you know, overthinking things is when your performance starts to slip. So I definitely think it's just a matter of, you know, staying composed and not getting too complacent. And once again, like not getting too high, not getting too low. That's, you want to find that good middle in order to play the best you can. So I'd say that was one of the keys last year, was just, you know, having the confidence and just not getting too complacent with myself.
Yeah, because I'd watched you for, at that point, a couple seasons. You were with the Ogden Mustangs, and then you ended up getting traded to Ontario because Ogden ended up with just a surplus of goalies, which seems to happen with Ogden, because it seemed to happen again this year. I don't think they have one goalie they started with. Ogden is rotated through, but that's kind of Ogden, you know, that's kind of what they do. They kind of circulate through some goalies. And I mean, as for Brizgalov getting promoted, that he got promoted, but they started with a few other names with Brizzy and Net this year. And now there's not one goalie on the Ogden roster heading into the playoffs that started with the team that I'm aware of. I think they've all moved on. So you got traded from Ogden to Ontario, and then you got acquired by Vernal in the offseason. Was Dan K show right to say that there was kind of like a Tarantino revenge tour happening that following season?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, I knew what I could do as a goalie, and I know I had a lot more to show than the games that I played. And fortunately for me, I did have a good season with Ogden, despite the trade. But I definitely knew I still had a lot left in the tank. So there definitely was a bit of a chip on my shoulder for that season. And, you know, the goal was getting to college and finding a team to play for in college. So I think that was another goal that I had for that season. So with those things combined, that definitely drove like how I wanted to play that year, and kind of was the main driving factor for my success.
Okay. So off season, or not off season, how about the off the ice preparedness, and starting with the mental preparedness, what do each of you do off the ice to mentally prepare for yourselves to get, and this doesn't have to be like right before the game. This can just be days off. This could be in training. How do you mentally handle the training aspect, that off ice time, visualization and such? Let's start with Eddie.
I'm kind of a perfectionist in a way, which has been something I've had to battle. I feel like a lot of goalies can probably relate to that. My biggest thing, like with going into games, is finding confidence, for one, like Tino was saying. And for me, that a lot of it comes down to, you know, I'm very into my faith. And so that comes down to trusting God, for one. And then two is just working as hard as I can. Like, even if I know I'm going to play a 3-3 or something, I'm usually trying to get extra reps on the ice or in the gym to make sure I'm ready. And anywhere from vision training, that kind of thing, just to make sure that I can have no doubts going into the game, because I know I've done the work. And I know that if it is a doubt, then it's just kind of a lie. And then I would just say, like, visualizing and breathing has been huge. Like, I'm in that intense state, but throughout the day, like, I almost flood my day with visualization. I usually take like a 2-hour nap before I go to the rink and stuff. And I'd probably say I sleep for 45 minutes of it. And then the rest of the time is just visualizing, pretending to sleep. And so I found that really helps me. And for a while it was Sensorena, but I kind of figured that visualization is similar, because you can create your own situations and that kind of thing. But yeah, I would just say working hard and visualizing are probably my two biggest things that I try to emphasize.
All right. I know the visualizing sleeping is basically how I spend most of my evenings until I can finally fall asleep.
Yeah.
But Heath, how about you? What's your off-ice schedule look like in terms of that?
Yeah, you know, during the week, I like to hit the gym. I like to stay loose. Like, if I know I'm going to play in a weekend, especially, I'll throw in a couple extra yogas in there, really get the body feeling, you know, loose and not really push it too hard. I'll hit legs a lot more than I usually do, things like that. Just kind of get the legs ready for the endurance battle it's going to take on over the weekend. On the visualization side, I do meditations daily. I wake up, I do a meditation. Even in the off season, I do that. I wake up, I do a meditation, and then I go and I do a yoga, and then I work out. So that's just me pretty much every day. And then about midday, I'll grab my headset and turn on Sensorena. I've been doing that for a few years now. I really personally enjoy it. I'll face some shots on that, you know, and when you're not able to get ice a lot, you know, it helps, right? Like that same feeling of, you know, seeing a puck go into a, even though it's a virtual glove, right? It's still seeing it go in. You can track it, things like that. There's a reason that a lot of guys do that. It's just, it helps the load. It takes a load off, you know, where you'd usually be on the ice, you know, you're not using every muscle possible and it risking an injury. Right. And it's really good for load management. And I really focus on just trying to stay present. You know, I think that's the key thing with goaltending is trying to stay in that. You can't control what happened 5 minutes ago. You can't control what happens 5 minutes in the future. Just being right here, right now, and one puck at a time. That's kind of my mentality when it comes to going into a game. One puck at a time, because, you know, that's all you can do, right? That's why my buddy Blake Weirich started that nonprofit One Puck at a Time, because that's really all you can think about as a goalie is the next shot or the shot that's coming at you at that time. So. That's kind of my mental preparedness week in a nutshell, getting ready for a game weekend.
Yeah, having that Dory mindset as a goalie is pretty critical to success, you know. Tino, mm-hmm. How about yours?
Yeah, so during the week, I try to have a good week of practice, especially knowing if, say, for this year, I have a pretty solid opportunity of getting a game. That weekend, I like to have a good solid week of practice just to have some confidence going into the weekend of games. But as far as actual game days, I try not to think of the game too much before going to the rink, just because my mind tends to wander a lot. And of course, when I tell myself not to think of the game, my mind's gonna think of the game, obviously, so I try and limit that the best I can. But once I get to the rink, that's when I start to do some visualization and, you know, just go through my regular routine, but just, you know, staying focused for the game and staying present. I do like to be a little bit loose when I do get to the rink, but leading up to warmups and once I'm getting in my routine of stretching and doing ball work and stuff like that, that's when I really try to lock it in, and getting dressed for warmups is when I lock it in. But I think it's good to be flexible with being loose and serious. You just got to play your cards right on, you know, when you choose to do those things. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, just trying to limit my thoughts going into the game, just because when you're worrying too much about, you know, what the outcome can be or how good or bad you can play, that energy is taking away from your ability to make a save. So the less you think about things, I think, the more you can put that into, you know, reading plays, making saves, tracking the puck. So that's something I've been working on this year. And Eddie and I have had a lot of conversations on different things that we do. So I'm definitely taking a bunch of things that he does too and putting it into my game also, but it's definitely a work in progress.
We each have that completely different styles, but they all work for an individual person. So for those other goalies listening in, you got to find the thing that works for you. What works mm-hmm. for you throughout the week?
Say that's huge, because like when I was in 16 specifically, that was the year that honestly like murdered my confidence coaching and whatever. But I knew I wanted to be serious at that point. And my coaching staff kept telling me, "You're too serious. You're too serious. Stop doing your warmups. Like, be loose with the guys." And so I did, and it just utterly failed, which I think was important because I know now that it doesn't work. which is, I guess, something you can say is like, don't be afraid to fail for anybody that's listening. Like, try it. Even if it's just a practice, try it. And if it fails, like, know that it was a step forward, even if it feels like it was a step back, because now you know that it doesn't work. But yeah, like, I think that's huge, to just find your individual style. Even with us three on the podcast, like, not one of us was really the same in how we prepare.
No.
And yet each one of us is respectively successful where we're at.
Yeah. And that's the key aspect, is finding that proper balance for you. What works for you? You could be the crazy goalie like me that kind of needs to be fed up heading into that, be angry, hating your team captain because he's kind of the biggest prima donna on the team. Helps. You know, you're not going to agree with all your teammates. And I use that fuel to each goalie, you know, like, whatever that is, being loose, being focused, being Captain Serious, listening to Miley Cyrus, whatever floats your boat, getting into the crease. I mean, that's going to be each person has their own thing. So before we get into maybe some tips and such, we're all goalies, so I have to ask. We will start with Tino. Tino, who's your current favorite goalie playing pro hockey? And because I say pro hockey, because you might be really into like an SHL goalie or something. So who's your favorite goalie playing pro hockey and why?
I've been watching Dustin Wolf recently. He's, you know, he just recently got called up again. He just had two great games this past week. But I think even looking at that, that's a great way to just see how the whole confidence thing works. I remember a little bit ago, he played against the Sharks, and granted, the team in front of him didn't play a great game, and of course, D-zone turnovers, and next thing you know, they're 2-on-1s and going across the crease, and there's nothing he could really do about it. But a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, this kid's not ready. Like, he's not ready yet. Like, keep him in the minors more. He gets called up again. He played Vegas the other night. I think he had like 2 goals on 40 shots or something like that. And then last night he played against the Canadians that I was also watching. He had another great game. So that's another great thing about like what Eddie was saying with setbacks. You think it's a setback, but just building that mental toughness could actually result in a step forward. And I think that's a great example of what he just said on, you know, yeah, maybe one of his games didn't go to plan, but, you know, the next time he got called up, you know, he took advantage of it. But as far as what I like about him, just like all of us, he's known as an undersized goalie, but I love his movement and just like how smooth and quick everything is, and just seems like he's always in position to make a save. Like, he doesn't really have to sprawl out and make a highlight reel save, which, as fun as those are to see on TV, as a goalie, you do want to keep things simple as best as possible. Yep. So I think that's definitely something I like watching about him, is every save he makes it look super easy. So that's something I definitely want to try and do with my game too, and always have been trying to do and work on. But
yeah, now you trained with Dustin, didn't you?
So he grew up in California, close to where I live before he moved down to LA. But I didn't train with him, but I got to skate with him one time a few summers ago. And he ended up playing with my older brother for a couple of years. So I was able to, you know, have that personal relationship with him, just us both being goalies. My brother is a forward, so they don't get along as much as goalies do. But yeah, I think despite being friends with him or not, like what he's done in the AHL and NHL has been pretty special so far. So I've definitely been paying attention to all the games he's been playing so far. So it's been a lot of fun.
I like the clips they've got of him hopping in net.
That's crazy. I've been trying to do that, and I can't get any air on it. One time I almost fell trying to do it this year. So I'm like, all right, I need to limit this a little bit.
I'd pull something doing what he does. And well, I'd pull something just making a save right now. But just seeing his little warm-up routine, and they've got pictures of him like fully airborne. I think the Wranglers were sharing that one as well with, when he went back up to Calgary. But actually, let's go to Edstrom before I finish with Heath on this question too, because I think I know Heath's answer. So, Eddie,
I may shock you.
Okay. So who's your favorite pro goalie right now that you're enjoying watching?
I think I'm the shortest of this bunch, so I feel like everybody's probably expecting me to say Saros. Saros is number two, but for me, it's Bobrovsky, actually. He helped me a lot because we obviously at GGR got to talk to his goalie coach, Hanu, who's back in Finland, actually. But just I was always this structured goalie, like being smaller, and technicality was always a big aspect for me. And Bobrovsky kind of taught me to loosen up my hands and be flowy, and just his habits are unbelievable. Like, he might be a bean pole of a human, like probably 160 pounds, like soaking wet. But he's like, his habits are just impeccable. Everything from his head checks to the way he can be so mobile around the crease is just, it's unreal to watch. And so more his style that I just really enjoy watching. I feel like he's very overlooked, being like a $10 million goalie. Like, everybody kind of thinks he's overrated, but if you look at all of his stats, like, he's putting up 9-1, 9-2, 9-3s consistently. And so yeah, it's just the style of his play that really gravitates towards me. And yeah, it's just his flowiness is what I really like to watch.
He's very structured too. That's one thing I noticed about Bobrovsky.
It's like a loose structure.
Almost like the highlights I watch of him, or just games that he's played on YouTube, it's just everything. It almost looks robotic.
But yeah.
Like, everything. That's one thing I like about a lot of goalies. It's just like how they move and the structure in their game. And Bobrovsky is one of those guys who, like, he's just so structured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was watching him. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
All right. I was watching some film on him because he's normally the guy I watch film on. And I was it's just on Insta. And there was this one play. It was – and I know you guys probably saw the Dallas Stars save where he tipped it. He went blocker side, and that was just filthy. But there was another one. Like, you see how he's able to make those just full split, used like, disgusting saves. Then there was another one. It was similar but on the glove side. I forgot who he was playing. I think it was New York. And you just watch him project towards this puck, and he's just all over it. And you're talking a 90-mile-an-hour slap shot on the ice, and he read it like nothing. And it's just those underrated saves that the announcer's like, oh, Bobrovsky makes a save. And every goalie is sitting there like, holy shit, like, that was sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about you, Heath? So it's not Jonathan Quick.
Well, I mean, he's the reason that I play. Right now I've been watching a lot of Dustin Wolf also, just being that, and UC Saros, being that we're all undersized goalies here. Those two guys' games are immaculate to watch. Their skating ability is insane. The smaller goalies have to have great skating ability. We have to make up for our size somewhere else, and that's with our skating ability. Another guy that I watch pretty frequently is someone not short at all, Thatcher Demko. The guy's a monster. And I mean, his reading of every play, it's so fun to watch. I mean, like, obviously he's like 6'6" and can see everything, right? But like, the way he just reads the play and like his desperation on it, on, you know, he never gives up. Like, I love goalies who consistently, on a consistent basis, never give up on a play. Like, you know, pucks, you know, wide open net, all of a sudden a glove comes out of nowhere or a pad comes out of nowhere. I mean, those are the goalies. The compete level is insane. That's, you know, Quick in a nutshell. Those kind of goalies are the goalies that I watch, and I kind of try to, you know, if you watch any NHL goalie, you could take something from their game and adapt it to yours, right? Yeah. And that's just like there's certain guys that can play the puck better than others in the NHL, and you watch them for their puck playing ability, and I could go through every NHL goalie and be like, yeah, this is what he does really well. But like, the guys that I watch pretty consistently is obviously Quick, but UC Saros and Wolf and Demko. Those are my top three right now that I'd have to say.
And usually Sarov has come on pretty strong towards the end of the year, hasn't he? He's just like turned his game up.
Yeah, he really has. And I mean, that's what you want out of a playoff goalie, right? You want their game to increasingly get better as the year goes on. I thought he would have been dealt at the deadline, but they're sitting in a playoff spot right now. So I think they're pretty good where they are right now. So
how much term does he have left?
Is this his last year?
I think he's got a year after this one, if I'm not mistaken.
Because I'm imagining they would have potentially, unless they really did see themselves as having a chance, especially since he has come on, going into elite prospects instead of cap friendly. I live in elite prospects, so let's look at this. But it looks like, can I just arrange this by team every single time?
It is a lot harder to deal a starting goalie at the deadline, too, from what I've heard.
Yeah.
I would honestly.
You're gonna pay a lot.
Yeah. But there are rumors about Markstrom, too, and I haven't seen any news about him lately. But
yeah. Well, I mean, Ullmark was going to be dealt to the Kings, and he denied the trade. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How could you break up that duo? Come on.
Dude, I don't know.
That would break up the goalie world right there.
Yeah,
that would have sucked. But no, that
Carroll
was
has
that
one year left, $5 million. So
yeah,
they could get a lot for him at the end of the year too.
Yeah,
1 year.
Especially if they go on a deep run.
Yeah,
if they go on a deep run in the playoffs, and he shows a lot. Yeah,
I think it's also like where he's at right now kind of shows the epitome of like shorter goalies always having to gain respect. Like he is.
Yeah.
So unbelievably underrated because he's on Nashville, but everybody was talking about, oh, like Askarov is 13-0 in his last 13 and putting up like 950s and stuff. Pull him up. Saros is done. Like you look at just like what he's done in Nashville. He's Vezina like contention and he's been in all-star weekends and still people are just like trying to find what's next and best. And I think it'd be really good for honestly to him find somewhere that's actually appreciates him and where he can maybe find a better like cup contending team.
So yeah, his last two games he's at a 9.58 and a 9.31. So I think he's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Pretty good stats.
I don't know. I don't know.
So where do you think he'd be a good fit if it's not Nashville, if they're going to pull up Askarov? And honestly, Nashville's been one of those teams. They have been the whole of their organization. They have been blessed with goalies, and
yeah,
there's not a lot of organizations that can say that. They've just been. It's kind of like the Packers and quarterbacks. It's sickening.
Yeah,
how they are blessed with the next generational quarterback every single time, and that just seems to be Nashville. So Saros is dealt. During free agent frenzy, where do you think is a good fit? What team do you think he'd? How old is he?
He's 28. I mean,
he's like in his prime. Even after training with Georgiev and stuff, like obviously I'd love to see him at the Avs because with him and Net and the Avs, like I think he would just run away with the season. And that's no disrespect to Georgiev because he's so elite. But like a practical place for him would probably honestly be like Toronto. Like you're looking at it, he's somewhat cheap goaltender compared to other goalies out there. And with the skill level around him, that would be in Toronto and Samsonov just going down and struggling.
He got hurt again, didn't he?
Yeah. And he's been kind of struggling this season, which happens, but I think if they could find a real solidified starting goalie, like Toronto would be a weapon.
That depends which team shows up in front of them. Yeah. But what team shows up in front of them? That's the difference. Yeah. Is it the Toronto playoff team that loses in the first round every year, or is it the Toronto of regular season that's got 60-point guys all the way down their lineup? So depends.
If Toronto could – like, I hate Toronto, so I don't want them to do well. But you know hockey well enough to be like, okay, if they made a couple moves, I think they just need – they've got so much firepower that's clogged that if they could unclog, at least one, but preferably two pieces and get real, like two real solid blue liners. My God, they would be dangerous. If they got Saros and then they were able to unclog, like say if they could get under out off of like Tavares's contract and then deal like Nylander, and they could get some pieces back for that. Specifically defensive pieces when you're sitting out there looking like I'm glad that Buffalo, we've been able to at least acquire some solid D and keep building up our defensive core is so young that the oldest guy on the team, I think, is Connor Clifton, and he's 28. I mean,
the Avs just gave you guys Byram for Mittelstadt, and like Byram's a young guy.
Yeah, Byram's young, and Mittelstadt, and honestly, like the Sabres fans were not happy about.
I love having Mittelstadt already.
Well, that's the thing is like Mittelstadt, everyone said, because I've been listening, all I do is listen. I don't watch that much NHL hockey, but I listen to three different Sabres podcasts when I'm at the gym, and not one of them are happy about every single one of them said it's going to happen, but they should resign him. So we don't think it's going to happen. And then they traded him and they're like, look, it's not like we're unhappy to have Byram, but Mittelstadt basically has been trying to find his identity as a Sabre for 5 or 6 years now, and he's finally come into his own. He's finally a player where fans are like, okay, we're finally excited that he's finally gotten to where he's at. And then we basically sent off this perfectly prepped player to go tear it up with Colorado. So there's not fans rooting against him. They all want to see him win a cup. So they're like, would be great to see him win a cup because everyone hated Eichel winning a cup. Apparently now Mittelstadt said some things that's maybe at least pissed off one Sabres broadcast or podcast. But it's one of those things where, yeah, Mittelstadt's going to be really good down there. What is he going to be, second line in it for you guys right now? Or is he top lining it? Who would he be? Who would be his wingers? Because you guys needed more depth on the center, from what I understand. Because they always connect with other broadcasts too.
First so is Colorado guy. MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Lehkonen usually. I don't know who he would be with, actually. Yeah, I don't know.
He's a great fit, though. From what I've heard, he's been a great fit in Colorado. The Sabres fans are really liking Byram. It's going to be a weird offseason again for Buffalo, but it lasts 4 years.
If you can, actually, watch the Edmonton Avs game last night. Lehkonen ended up scoring with 0.5 seconds left in overtime. But I was watching that with my dad, and it was legitimately playoff hockey. Like, you're talking about these two powerhouse teams. The flow of the game was stupid fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I just don't watch. I can watch it. I got TSN, so I can watch a lot of these games. I just, like last night, I was, you know, deep into the final couple games of the NCDC play. In fact, since we're all on this, can I pull this up, add to stage? Y'all guys see this save by
Yes.
Charles last night? Yes.
That was sick.
Yes.
Can I blow this thing up? Can this thing go full screen? Yes, the puck gets given away, and honestly, there's a little bit of a fault by the defender here. Just dropping
it's like,
it. Like,
I mean, yeah, it's on his tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and goalies don't pass that hard.
No. It's a soft pass. It's a soft pass. Here it is, and he just lets it go. But what a snag. Just this thing was sick. I had a pull that that's what I was watching last night. When I watched that, I went, that is fucking ridiculous.
I don't know. Yeah. I hope they took him out to dinner after that one. That's
they might need to.
He deserves that.
Because Charles had a wild save right there. But yeah, I was watching that game and then the Ogden Mustangs game, and both games went to a shootout. So I had a lot of extra hockey last night, and I was very excited about because the seasons are winding down on the junior hockey world. And yeah, there's not much now. We're going into the USPHL's Natties starting this week. So I'll be tuned into basically every game. There's a couple games where I think for the first 2 days they overlap, and they might do it on day three. They overlap same because it's the same rink in Utica, which I guess Tino would be the one that would be most familiar with that rink.
Yeah.
So I only get to watch one game at a time, so I'll just tune into which one is more interesting, I guess. I can dual screen it. Who's to say I can't dual screen it? I can dual screen it. But yeah, so I'll be into that. And then the NCDC playoffs start. I'd be watching the NHL playoffs, but NHL, you guys had to go to your own streaming service. Feel free to reach out and send me a link so I can watch your games. And this premium package I saw recently is, I want to know what that's all about. But But yeah, I don't really get to see a lot of the NAHL stuff. Otherwise, I'd be watching the NAHL and the NCDC. So I'll have the BCHL, and they got amazing coverage. So I'll be kind of bouncing between the BCHL and the NCDC playoffs here. So you guys keep me in a loop with what is happening in the NHL, that's for sure, because I just I just don't tune in as much. I just know what's happening for my Sabres podcasts. But we like these episodes. We want to get more goalies on, and we're definitely – as we move into season five, going to be doing a lot more focus on goaltending. Let's just say that there's going to be a lot of focus on, we have a lot of scouts and a lot of hockey professionals coming on in the coming months. And so it's going to be an interesting, it's going to be some interesting information, interesting lookouts. And if you're a goalie, you definitely want to tune in, because we're going to be, like I said, doing some goalie analysis. And for any of you listeners that haven't got a chance to listen to or watch, we just recently dropped on St. Patrick's Day the analysis of Heath Goldschmidt's game for his first ever college start. Ooh. And so you can all not only listen to that broadcast, but you can watch it as we dropped our first ever YouTube video. So you can actually follow along and as we assess Heath's first ever college game and the fact that he chose not to make his first save, a wild windmill, much to the dismay of our co-host at that time, Steve. So we again want to thank Cade Nenstrom of the USPHL's Rogue Valley Royals and Antonio Tarantino of UMass Boston Beacons for jumping on with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks
guys
for having me. Thank you.
No, guys, thanks for jumping on. And we also want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in. Make sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date. This is the Pigeonhole Hockey Podcast with Chris and Heath.
Have a good one, hockey fans.
And remember, listeners, always clear your crease.